If you would, this morning, take your Bibles to Exodus chapter 20. We are going to continue. I find it no small irony, and I'm always excited when the Lord works out on the preaching calendar things that I'm not even thinking about. Anybody know what is remarkable and exceptional about today? 50 years ago today, our Supreme Court found a right that was never intended to be found in the Constitution. There's no right at all. The right to death is what I would call that, and that is not a constitutional right. Roe versus Wade was codified into law by judicial fiat 50 years ago today, January 22nd, 1973. And I did not think, and I had even my own children ask me in previous years, do you think they'd ever overturn that? And there is no way in my mind that that law would ever be overturned, but God can do it. And He did. And we praise the Lord for that. And so as we look at the sixth commandment this morning, thou shalt not kill, we look at it on a day that I think we need to be reminded of the culture of death in which we live. We'll talk about that later. But there's no small irony in there. There's so much information that you would think I could fit it all in at least 1 hour. Well, I don't preach for an hour, but I think there's so much information that I'm actually not going to talk too much about abortion this morning, but I'm going to push that off for a week. We'll talk in more detail about it. But the sixth commandment is so broad, more than you might think. And I hope today there's not so much of a call to action, but there is a call to right thinking. I know that when I was a young Christian, and even as I've walked with the Lord, there's been times in my life where I'm confronted with just my thinking as compared to what the Bible says. And when we renew our mind, it doesn't mean just that the brain cells are regenerating themselves. God has created that, and that is part of it. But it's to say, I'm going to change my thinking to be in line with what God has said. And that is how we renew our mind. Just looking at what God has said and making sure that we take the same stands that God takes, that we hold the same positions that God holds, that we hold to the body of truth that God has given to us without compromise or apology. So I don't know if you know this or not, but in America, the Ten Commandments are considered dangerous. You put them up in a classroom or a courthouse, and what happens? There's a huge stir, and someone eventually, inevitably, will try to make you take them down. I saw a cartoon once. It was depicting two school administrators, and they were watching kids walking through a metal detector. And one is saying to the other, this is the latest in school safety devices. If one of them tries to smuggle in a gun or a knife, or the Ten Commandments, the light will go off. Do you ever wonder which one of the commandments causes all the controversy? I think they all do. It's not just one. People absolutely, I mean, just voraciously object to the first commandment. Only one God. How can your God be the right God? I mean, just ruling out anybody else's God is offensive to our culture. I think most people and even Christians don't see the need for a day of rest. Again, we're not under the law, but God has designed us for that day of rest. Listen, that's not a time to worship. That's a time to go on the lake. So the fourth commandment is right out. In the sensual and seedy culture in which we live, people enjoy indulging in, or worse yet, I can't say worse yet, or just as bad, watching others indulge in immoral and illicit acts. That puts the seventh commandment right out. And on it goes. But I'll tell you this, just about the only commandment that people seem to still accept is number six. No one approves of murder. I think it's just absolutely so contrary to the law of nature that every culture really has some prohibition against murder. Even in America, If you can believe it, murder's still against the law. But as we look at the sixth commandment, as we put it under a magnifying glass, and we start to understand its full implications and what God is trying to communicate, I'm going to tell you, in our culture today, I don't know other than the seventh commandment, any commandment that is so blatantly and flippantly violated. I'll talk a little bit about this next week, but I hope you understand you live in a state that still has legalized abortion up to 20 weeks and 6 days. And by the way, I found information that would help minors skirt telling their parents that they're going to go for an abortion. It's just wickedness. Wickedness. We look at verse 13. Thou shalt not kill. It's one of the shortest commandments that's given. In the original language, it's really just two words, and I very rarely try to pronounce Hebrew words, but I'm going to give it to you. You can write it down phonetically, but it's important. It's important. Lo ratzak. Those are the two words. It carries this idea of simply don't kill. It's not complicated. Don't kill. But what kind of killing does the Bible have in mind? You know, my understanding is that there are at least 8 different words for killing in the Hebrew language. 8 different words. That tells me that the one that is used here in this passage wasn't chosen by accident. It's a very specific choice that God has put in this passage. And this word, ratzak, is never used as part of the legal system. It's never used in the context of military battles. There are other words that are used, other Hebrew words that are used for talking about execution in relation to the death sentence that's been given. There's other words that are used for killing an enemy soldier in the heat of battle. They're different words for those things, and neither of those are the word that is used in this passage here. By the way, this word is never used in reference to hunting or killing an animal. So, despite what PETA and the animal rights activists might say, we're not breaking the sixth commandment if we eat a Big Mac at McDonald's. Now, you might be breaking every law of common sense and good judgment, but you're not breaking the sixth commandment. What the commandment forbids is not just killing, but more specifically, the criminal taking of a human life. Murder is exactly what God has in mind. The premeditated taking of an innocent life. That's what the sixth commandment really is talking about. The deliberate killing of a personal enemy. And so when we put this word under the magnifying glass, we learn that even murder is too constricting for this word. It's too limiting. Because this word can be used for any form of wrongful or criminal death. It's used in what we would call voluntary manslaughter, or sometimes called a crime of passion. And all that means is that there was not a premeditation involved. Something happened and someone just allowed their emotions to overcome them and they commit a brutal act of murder. Now that's still homicide, I want you to understand, but it's not the same as premeditated, but it's still covered by this word. The same word is also used for not only voluntary manslaughter, but involuntary manslaughter. That's when you point a gun at somebody and you never pull the trigger, but they get shot and die anyways. If you've read the news, you might know what I'm talking about. If not, it doesn't matter. But even according to the Bible, some accidental deaths, even though they're unintentional, are still punishable. And so even when you go to the Old Testament, you'll find out that God has made provision for these instances. He's put up something called sanctuary cities. But in Deuteronomy 4:42, we're reminded that which talking about those that have killed somebody by accident. He says, which should kill his neighbor unawares and hated him not in times past, talking about that involuntary manslaughter. And so he gave them these sanctuary cities, but they were still punishable. So if we boil it all down to its most basic meaning, the Sixth Commandment forbids us forbids the unjust taking of an innocent life. So murder in cold blood, manslaughter, voluntary, involuntary, negligent homicide, all those things are covered under this idea of thou shalt not kill. You know, God's people have always recognized that there are some situations when taking a life is not only permitted, but is actually warranted or advocated. One such situation is self-defense. The protection of yourself, the protection of your family from violent attack. Listen, that is our job, men, is to protect our family. You say, what about turning the other cheek? We're not going to delve into that just now, but I will tell you, God has given men the job and the position of being the protector for your family. So if you extend that principle, we may also kill not only to defend our family, but to defend others. That's even written into our state law. If you are a concealed gun owner, you may brandish your weapon and fire when you're not, when your life is not in danger, but the life of someone else. The government recognizes we have a duty to look out for our neighbor. You can expand that principle even further and say not just the defense of others, but in the defense of your nation. There are some that believe that taking a life, no matter what, is against the Sixth Commandment, but that is not what God is saying here. It's not saying that you cannot serve in the military. You know, when we as Christians begin to think through issues of war and our responsibility to the country in which we live, we walk down a road that believers for centuries have walked before us. They've traveled and wrestled with these ideas. But throughout history, Christians, by and large, have come to the consensus that there's something called a just war theory or a Christian just war theory. This just war theory really answers for the Christian two very important questions. Number one, is this war just? And I'll explain what makes a war just or unjust in just a moment. And the second question it answers is, how can a just war be fought justly? Those are important questions. You see, the Christian just war theory declares that every military action, in order to be justified, must be a matter of last resort. We're not going to initiate conflict. It must be declared by a legitimate authority. It must be inherently defensive, fought with a force proportional to the attack. And lastly, it must be waged against enemy soldiers and not non-combatants. Those are high standards, but I think they're good to be put in place. You see, the goal of any military action, according to the Christian worldview, must be to protect human life and to establish conditions of peace. And so sometimes the very theory of just war really causes us to think and understand that military action is required to prevent something worse from happening. Let me give you another idea of when it is good and right to take a human life. That's the execution of a death sentence. It's always, always wrong for us to take the law into our own hands. If justice is going to be done, it must not be done by the victim. And that victim cannot serve as the judge, the jury, and the executioner. That's what Moses did. some 18 chapters ago in chapter 2 of Exodus, and he was wrong. He was wrong. The Bible makes a very clear distinction between private individuals and the state carrying out capital punishment. Capital punishment, when it's justly administered by the governing authorities, is a lawful form of taking life. Listen, when the state punishes by death and takes the life of the guilty, it's not murder, it is justice. Now, this is not only taught in the Old Testament, but we're given that to be true in the New Testament. Paul told the Romans, who were then under imperial authority, and they were under a dictatorship, but he wrote to the church of Rome in chapter 13, verse 4, he said, "For he," talking about the governmental authorities, those that are in charge, "is the minister of God to thee for good." But he went on to say, "But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid, for he," talking about the government, "beareth not the sword in vain, for he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon them that do evil." It is the government's responsibility, not prerogative, it is their responsibility to uphold the law and to make sure that they are executing those that have broken and deserve broken the law and deserve capital punishment. Let me state again, unequivocally, clearly, that it is wrong, it is sinful, and it is prohibited by God to avenge ourselves. Several times in the Bible, one time back in the book of Romans, just before he lays out who is responsible to carry out the death penalty, he reminds us in Romans chapter 12, verse 19, dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place under wrath, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. So the government has a God-given responsibility to carry out that justice. And when the government does not mete out that justice like they should, when they don't wield the sword against evil like they should, what happens? It invites more evil into our culture. And we see that in our day and age. We are slowly, although it seems to be accelerating, becoming a society of lawlessness. But that doesn't open the door for vigilantism. The command leaving vengeance to God remains in place. And the person, the perpetrator, he will receive justice. If not in this life, he will stand before God. And most certainly will receive justice. Now, I think these have all been examples of what God is basically not talking about. We talked about some of the things that he has discussed, and then we spent a lot of time talking about what he's not talking about, those exceptions to the rule. So God does allow for the taking of life, but only when the goal is not the destruction of life, but the preservation of life. And that's obviously true in the case of self-defense. Sometimes it is necessary to take a life to save lives. Just recently, a 21-year-old hero at the Greenwood Mall, I don't even know what state it was, but he neutralized an active shooter. I don't know how many lives he saved, but he saved countless lives. In the case of the just war theory, the same principle applies just on a larger scale. The purpose of having an army is not to kill and to conquer, but to keep a country's citizens safe. The same life-preserving principle holds true then for what I just talked about, capital punishment. The execution of a murderer stops him from killing anyone else. That's just basic logic right there. But it does something more than that. It stops him from killing again, but it deters other would-be criminals from doing the same. And so not only is it a deterrent, but it is a matter of justice. I always want to preface when I quote an Old Testament verse to give a New Testament church a principle. But let me read this, and I'll explain it. Genesis 9:6 says, "Whosoever sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed." Now, if I stopped right there, we'd say, well, that's the eye for an eye. But we're not under the Old Testament law, but there's a principle that is given. That's not where the verse ends. He says, "For in the image of God made he man." I'm less concerned with the Old Testament commandment that is given right there than the principle that is underlying it. There's a basic biblical principle behind capital punishment. And it's precisely because life is precious, precisely because we are made in the image of God, that someone who takes it must be criminally executed. I didn't always hold that position. But the longer that I've been a Christian, the more I study God's Word, it has become very clear that God expects the government to mete out justice as a matter of justice and as a deterrent to those that would do the same. But what makes life so precious is the fact that we are created in the image of God. And so the sixth commandment preserves the sanctity of human life. Now, I thought about just spending the rest of my time on the abortion issue. And just because Roe versus Wade has been overturned does not mean that that issue has been won. I'm going to spend some more time, Lord willing, next week talking about some things about it. But I want to remind you that God is the author. I mean, he's the inventor of life. He's our Lord, our ruler. He's the sustainer. And since he is the giver of life, since he is sovereign or should be sovereign over our lives, it is his prerogative when to take it. It's not ours. And so he can do so in his own time, in his own way. I believe the sixth commandment has incredible implications, powerful implications for our society today. I mean, we are living in angry, violent times. You know, I think about Noah, and the reason God sent the flood, or one of the reasons that he gave, was because violence filled the earth. And I think, was it really so much worse than it is now? That's a frightening thought. We're living in times when murder in all its forms is commonplace. I fear there is such a disregard for human life that we say, or kids should say, that we truly are living in a culture of death. There's death in the city. In places like Chicago, there's at least 1 to 2 shootings. Let me rephrase that. 1 to 2 deaths from shootings every day. Last year, 15% decrease. But let me give you some of the stats. Just in Chicago, 3,250 shootings last year alone. I didn't do the math. I mean, that's got to be nearly 10 a day. Of those, 640, almost 640, is like 637 of those victims died. Those were just gunshot. I'm not talking about people that were stabbed. I'm not talking about people that were bludgeoned to death. That happens, I won't say every day in big cities, but it happens all too often. Strangers just pushing another stranger in front of a train. I read a story about a Little League game and Little League players that want to kill each other. Now, this was a 16, 17, 18 age group, and it was several years ago. But I read of one game that ended with one player that got hit in the head with a baseball bat and died. But the murderer could not be charged with murder because he was in and out of consciousness from being hit over the head with a rock. There's death on our highways. Motorists have road rage. They perceive slight. Somebody cut them off, or you say they broke too fast? They braked too fast? They stopped too fast. Anger, violence. And if it's not anger and violence, then there's impaired driving, distracted driving. whether it's under the influence of alcohol, drugs, or cell phones. Unfortunately, there's even violence in the home. There's spousal abuse. Sometimes one or both parents violate that sacred trust, striking their child in anger. I'm not trying to paint a doom and gloom picture. I'm just telling you, we live in a violent society. Where does all this violence come from? Video games, movies, TV shows, raunchy music? I don't think so. Those things just feed the real problem. You know what the problem is? Man's darkened heart comes from hearts that have turned away and rejected God. But those dark hearts, they are accelerated. That violence is accelerated in the media, where an entire industry promotes the breaking of the sixth commandment. The only time that I ever quote the American Association of, the American Psychological Association is when I am referencing their numbers. I think they're halfway realistic. I just want to say that because I'm about to quote something from them. I would never quote a solution they have for any problem in the world. I just want you to know that. But according to the American Psychological Association, by the time the average child finishes elementary school, by the way, that's finishing sixth grade, he or she will have watched 8,000 televised murders, 100,000 acts of on-screen violence. Now, I would love to believe that's not true in the lives and the families of those that attend Maranatha Baptist Church. But parents, we had better be on guard on what we allow into our front door, into our back door. Things aren't getting any better. I found this quote from a few years ago in the New York Times. This is the New York Times. This is not our best friend, I'll just tell you that. If you have the impression that movies today are bloodier and more brutal than ever in the past, and that their body counts are skyrocketing, you are absolutely right. Here's what they said. Inflation has hit the action-adventure movie with a big, slimy splat. You know what's so disturbing about that? What you consume affects how you live your life. Oh, that doesn't affect me. You're lying to yourself. You go all the way back to 1998, where the American College of Forensic Psychiatry, not again another bright and shining light of help to humanity, but they conducted a comprehensive review of scientific studies on the relationship between violence and violence on screen and violence in real life. There was 1,000 different studies that were given. Let me tell you, 980 of those thousands, that's 98% of those studies, established a definite link between violence that children see on screen and violence in real life. Let me retract that. I put children, it did not say that in the study. Let me rephrase that. A definite link between violence that people see on screen and the violence they perpetrate in real life. With those studies in place all the way since 1998, according to some of the best estimates I could find, media violence, according to that, has doubled America's homicide rate. I found this very interesting. Lieutenant Colonel David Grossman is a retired military psychologist. He is an expert on teaching people to overcome their natural reluctance to kill. That's his job, is getting soldiers to a place where they can pull the trigger in defense of their country. He was shocked to realize that children who watch TV and play violent video games are subjected to the same methods, the conditioning and the desensitization that the Army uses to train soldiers. Here's what he said. We are teaching our children how to kill, and we should not be surprised when they do. I want to remind you this morning that not all murders, however, are violent. I like what one man said. He said, sometimes death carries a clipboard and wears a lab coat. There's a book called The Culture of Death. And the author says that a small but influential group of philosophers and healthcare policymakers actively seek to persuade our culture that killing is beneficent. Let me translate that for you. He says it's a good thing when we're killing off people. He says suicide is rational. Natural death is undignified, and caring properly and compassionately for people who are elderly, prematurely born, disabled, despairing, or dying is the burden that wastes emotional and financial resources. Next week, I'm going to read to you a quote about somebody who thinks that people aren't any different than the animals around them. But I'll tell you, this kind of thinking is a direct frontal assault on the biblical worldview of personhood. Actually, I have that quote here. I thought I'd put it in for next week. Let me read it to you. This is a medical professor. This is one that is teaching the doctors of tomorrow. We can no longer base our ethics on the idea that human beings are special or a special form of creation made in the image of God, singled out from all other animals and alone possessing an immortal soul. Once this religious mumbo-jumbo has been stripped away, we may continue to see normal members of our species as possessing greater capacities of rationality, self-consciousness, communication, etc., than members of other species, but we will not consider life sacrosanct. He said, but we will not regard as sacrosanct the life of each and every member of our species. Yeah, you know, that's the kind of rhetoric, that's the kind of teaching that starts telling and convincing the next generation that some lives are not as important as other lives. In fact, some lives are not worth living at all. I can remember when Missy was pregnant with Quincy, our first child. We were going up for one of our appointments, and the doctor wanted us to have some tests done. We asked about it. They're dangerous tests for the baby. It includes penetrating the placenta, to test the amniotic fluid. And I had some questions. I'd never heard about this test before. And I was is there a concern? No, we do this all the time. Is there any side effects or is there any? Well, it rarely can cause a miscarriage, but that doesn't happen very often. And I said, well, what can you find out from this test? Well, one of the things that we check for is to see if the baby will have Down syndrome or not. And I was still sitting there. I've not had any kind of experience with this. And I said, well, what do you do with that information? Is there something that can be done to help the child? And he kind of looked at me, or she, I don't remember who it was. And they said this, no, it's to help you determine if you want to terminate the pregnancy or not. That's just wickedness. Not only is that wickedness, but I wonder how many healthy children were sacrificed on the altar of inconvenience, because I don't want to be inconvenienced with a child that has Down syndrome. Every life is made in the image of God. Every life has value and importance. You know what the result of this wicked culture in which we live is? Not just abortion, but euthanasia, assisted suicides, are becoming more and more exceedingly common. In some cases, they even have legal protection. Dr. Death Kevorkian used to have to do it in secret, but they do it openly today. Well, those are all violations of the sixth commandment. What a day to be remembering that life is precious. That means that we as Christians, remember the reciprocal principle of the commandments, not only what it says, but we are just by implication required to implement the opposite of that. Not only are we not to kill, but we are to preserve life then. That means that we just don't have a duty not to practice euthanasia. We must speak out against it. Not only are we not to practice abortion, but we are to speak out against it. I started with this thought: God alone is the Lord of life. He alone has the right to determine when it is time for someone to die. You know, one of the difficulties is that now we have the medical technology or capacity to keep a body functioning long after that time has come. And so I wanted to touch on this. I don't have time to touch on every possible question, but I think this is important. In a medical age and technology in which we live, it raises a lot of ethical questions about that. But just very briefly, I think that we have the responsibility to provide nourishment. I think to allow someone to starve to death is inhumane. But I don't believe we have a duty to provide extraordinary measures that would prolong life, like artificial respiration. So there is a definite distinction between killing someone and allowing someone that is terminal to finally breathe their last breath. You say, why do you say that? Because I think there are some Christians that struggle with guilt. And I don't think it's wrong. And I think by implication, by just looking at the definition of what God is talking about here, if God is the author of life and it is His decision, when we take that life support away and their heart stops or they stop breathing, I think that is part of the process in which God has allowed to happen in this cursed earth in which we live. But there is a difference between allowing somebody to die and causing their death. And in hospitals, not just in this nation, I read stuff, egregious things all the time over in the UK where nurses see a lack of rooms for patients, and so those that she didn't think had the capacity to come back started giving medication to terminate that person, to kill them. That's not letting someone die, that is killing them. And so that there has to be a bright line that's not crossed. And in our culture today, that bright line is being covered up with the muck and mud of sin. We must have constant vigilance. We'll talk about the Hippocratic Oath next week. Let me give you one other thing that the Sixth Commandment prohibits: suicide. God has not given us the right to end our own lives. To commit suicide is to claim lordship over your life. Now, let me be clear. Someone that has committed suicide did not surrender their salvation. We don't know what kind of deep, dark place that even a Christian can end up in. There's no sin that a Christian is not capable of committing. And so I want to make that clear. But such voluntary termination of our own lives is becoming more and more acceptable in our culture. I want to tell you this: voluntary euthanasia almost always becomes involuntary. When you go and look at the Netherlands, where thousands of medical patients are killed every year, what is especially frightening in those cases is that most of the requests for these so-called mercy killings do not come from the patients, but come from the family of the patients. And I think mostly they're trying to unload their burden. Just like so often abortion is used to maintain a loose and free lifestyle, so is euthanasia on the other end of the life spectrum. There's more we need to talk about, and so we'll reserve this for next week. But we need to have right thinking about life. We need to have right thinking about death. We need to have the right thinking about what it means, thou shalt not kill. Be careful, parents, about what influences you allow into your home. Maybe today would be just a good reminder to stop and do a little review in your own house to say, what influences have we let in? Who's knocking on the back door that we're ready to open up to? Maybe not just parents, but young people. They need a review and think about, what am I allowing into my own life? This violent culture causes you to act and think differently, and God has called us to renew our mind, to have right and good thinking, biblical thinking. Then I think we need to make sure that we have right thinking about those areas that God has given liberty to take life, and self-defense and preservation of life. When it's the government that is exercising justice or capital punishment, to make sure we have the right thinking in that area, and to make sure that even in cases of war, if called upon, that we will stand and defend the country that God has given to us. America is not perfect, but boy, I've been all over the world and I've never found a better place to live. I'm thankful for the freedoms that we have, and they are worth defending. Let's make sure that when we read the sixth commandment, we don't read into it what God never intended. Thou shalt not kill. We're not to murder innocent life. We'll go into more detail, and Jesus has a lot more to say, more than just murder, as we'll find out next week.